Muito obrigado e bom dia. I've been to Brazil many times. I've been to Latin America, all over the place. Right now, I'm not going anywhere, obviously. I'm going remotely. And I'm here to talk to you about the future and what I call the Great Transformation. I mean, let's make no mistake about this. You know, this is a difficult time, right? I mean, especially in Brazil, we are, it's hard. I mean, on my end, I can safely say it's been hard since February 23rd. My last engagement was in Dubai, and I have not been on an airplane since. And, you know, in 2019, I flew 357 times to get to engagements, and now I'm here looking at the camera. So this is really a great transformation, a great transition. And I think particularly for Brazil, it's quite difficult now. So I want to, before I get into the other stuff, I want to give you 5 points to take home, you know, for right now. Staying safe is the most crucial. You know, we've been through the same here in Switzerland, to stay agile, to keep changing, to stay smart, to be informed. Most important thing is to stay together, you know, to help each other. I've noticed, you know, in the 3 months of lockdown that we had here in Switzerland, I've talked to a lot more people remotely than I would ever talk in real life. You know? So there's a much stronger connection to people. That's really important, our solidarity and working together. And lastly, let's stay optimistic. Right? I think it's sometimes hard when you're looking at all of these things is to say that the future is going to be better than we thought, right? So let me start with the futurism stuff. This is not the question I asked, right? I'm not going to tell you what the future brings. There is no such thing as predicting the future. 50, 60 years ago, you had Alvin Toffler, Arthur C. Clarke, that were able to do that maybe, or now maybe you have Ray Kurzweil, who has, what, 23 PhDs, so he can probably do that as well. But my work is really not about this question, right? It's about getting a feeling for the future that we want. Right? I mean, this is a very important point. Just keep in mind, in the next 10 years, technology will be so explosively advancing, exponentially, that many things that we want are becoming possible, right? Do you want to change the human genome? Well, that's not 10 years, but 20 years, right? 30 years. Do you want to be able to talk to a robot like it's a person? That is already possible, right? There's going to be roughly 9 billion people on the internet by 2030. So to say what the future brings is kind of a moot question because we are making the future. Right? Every action that we take or every inaction that we choose creates the future. Right? So when I speak to people today about the future, especially if you're looking at marketing and stuff, right, the future is not about tomorrow. Right? The future is a mindset. And I think this is what I love about Brazil, by the way. It seems like the future mindset is just sort of inherently there. You know, while here in Europe, we're kind of like, you know, we like history, tradition, you know, so that's a little bit harder for us to look at the future. Let me kick off by Milton Friedman. Milton Friedman, a famous economist, once said, I think 50 years ago, right, only a crisis, actual or perceived, produces real change. And when that crisis and the change happens, the actions that are taken depend on the ideas that are lying around. And now we can safely say that some ideas that are lying around, they were quite tough and not so good to begin with, and they're getting worse, like surveillance. Right? And other ideas that were lying around, like solidarity, compassion, and all these things, they're also coming out. So you could safely say, I think the crisis is bringing out the best in us and the worst in us. And it's, when you look internationally, that's kind of how it shakes out. But we have to use this point to think about being a breaking point for the future. Right? This, what we're experiencing right now, will not end anytime soon, even when we have a vaccine. Right? The world is going into a reset mode for so many reasons. I mean, just think about the amount of money that governments have to spend, maybe not so much in Brazil or South America, but in Europe and the US, the amounts of money that governments have to spend to prop up business and people, right? Hundreds of trillions. That's going to change our entire economy. That's going to change our future. Right? You can safely say 2020 is a total change of program. Right? It's, you know, some stations will go dark, like cruise ships. And anyway, technology, I mean, many of you are in the tech business. I mean, technology comes out the winner pretty much across the board, right? And many other things come out as winners. Interesting, like healthcare, right? I mean, now we know we need to spend money on healthcare, right? Because if we don't, we're unprepared, and that's going to end really badly. I think it's also safe to say that we are already experiencing a time where technology has already, and science, of course, taken care of us in such a way that this epidemic did not cost 100 million lives, right? Because of all the things that we can already do. Right? But it's a total change of program. Right? And one change of program is that all of a sudden we realize how important people are. Right? We use all the technology, but then we keep saying, oh, no, I really wish I could hug you, right? Or we could meet up, or, you know, how important the interaction between people is. That will never go away. As long as we're human, I suppose. If we're going to become machines, that would be a moot point. Right? Just look at some stats here. Right? Many people are asking me this question. Is the world going to fall into an abyss in terms of the recession and just stay down there? I mean, you've seen all the posts about the V curve and the L curve and, you know, whatever shape of the recession curve, right? And I would say, well, it's completely unclear. I mean, my hunch is we're going into an L curve, which means down, 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 staying down, and somehow finding a way back up, right? But is it going to be a V, like the subprime financial crash? Yep, over here. Right? I don't think so. But the future has never been less certain than today. And we have to embrace this. And we're not going to make it more certain just by keeping asking for prognoses. You know? We have to ask the question, how can we shape the future that we need? Because we can't really predict it. So, like I said earlier, there's no such thing as going back to normal. And normal wasn't good enough anyway for many people. We're going to a different future. We're going to a future where there's a different narrative, a different story. And that story is going to be about how do we deal with emergencies, not just the pandemic, but technology, climate change, geoengineering. Right? I mean, these are big, big issues that are coming up. We're going to be more ready because of this, I hope. Right? So that brings me to the theme of my presentation, the Great Transformation. So I've come up with this sort of imaginary world that evolves before the crisis. You know, we had our nicely arranged priorities and stuff. And now it's like somebody's taken the whole world and shaken it up like one of those souvenirs you get from Paris or Venice, you know, with the snow in it, right? Right? And all of a sudden it's like, oh, you know, this is turning upside down. Right? And guess what's ending up on top? Well, you guessed it, of course, right? Healthcare, science, at least outside of America, just kidding, technology, right? Working from home, artificial intelligence, right? Political efforts of uniting, right? And what's at the bottom? Flying, cruise ships, oil and gas. Right? And it's interesting to see how the priorities have shifted. So I would say that this is truly the great transformation. But what's more important for you guys, so you're mostly in the marketing business, right? It's new narratives, new stories. And I can guarantee you a person that is 22 years old today, they're going to think about this crisis like my father thought about World War II. Okay. Well, hopefully in a more positive way, but this is a cut, right? This is not just a minor bump. Right? We're not going to go back to the beaches in the same way. We're not going to go back to concerts in the same way. And if we do, we have to suffer the consequences. We're going to have to get used to a different way of living, right? So I would say there's no real post-corona future. There's a with-corona and eventually a post-corona. Let's hope. Right? But here are the three main points, right? Three winners. And this is very important, I think, when you think about customers and how we do business and how we collaborate in the future. Okay? And that is those three things, right? It's basically big tech, big health, and big state. That's kind of a rough summary of what we're seeing right now. Right? I mean, technology, it's both a lifesaver for us, but it's also growing even more into something that could be seriously abused if done wrong, right? As we see, for example, with using mobile tracing and all these kind of ideas, right? And healthcare, of course, is being boosted by the entire budget shifting to healthcare. There's over 350,000 scientists working on a vaccine, right? And on antibody tests. I mean, think about all the money. So basically, the money, in my view, is going to go out of oil and gas, natural resources, the military, into those sectors. And that will bring also great opportunities for new jobs. Of course, you know, having said that, it's in a country like Brazil, for example, where I think the latest numbers are 35 million people are still living in poverty, that is going to crunch things even further. So we have to think about what that means and how we can create more inequality there. So let me talk about technology features first. I think that's a good start when we talk about the context, right? So we're heading down a road, and I call this the road of the game changers. The stuff that we've seen for years, you know, artificial intelligence, quantum computing, supercomputing, the cloud, virtual reality, augmented reality, and the Internet of Things, and all that stuff, I call this the game changers. That's happening all around us. And guess what? Now it's at the point where all of this is like warp drive into exponential. It's like the stuff that we see today, like Microsoft HoloLens, going into completely virtual reality. I mean, I swear in a couple of years, I'm going to go to the Zurich airport, I'm going to go into the HoloLens and pop out in Beijing, right? Like a real person. And that's basically science fiction is becoming science fact. And it's not just the rapid advance of sciences, it's also all the collaboration that happens, the different business models that are happening. And they're driven in your sector when we talk about marketing and products and brands and so on, primarily by those two things, right? Data. I've said many times data is the new oil, and I will make an addition to that shortly. Right? Data is the most powerful thing on the planet now. And the crisis is pushing that even further, because with data, we can predict, we can anticipate, we can interchange, we can figure out what to do ahead of time. And the second part, of course, is intelligence. I'll talk about that a little bit later, but when we talk about AI, that's actually a very bad word, because what we have today is not real intelligence. You know, it is smartness. Right? I mean, Google Maps is smart. Is it intelligent like me? No. I mean, you can ask any taxi driver in London who has allegedly the knowledge. Right? Does Google Maps have the knowledge? Well, it has a different kind of knowledge, right? So it's really interesting to see those two things together, they're going to run our world. Right? And they're getting a giant boost now because people are saying, you know what, if we have better data, we have more intelligence, we have a faster cloud, we can do a lot better in emergencies. Right? Except for, of course, a data emergency where some technology issue would be like a virus in the network. Right? So in many ways, you could now say, people have been joking about the oil thing, so I'm staying with the theme. You know, maybe data is no longer just the oil, it's also like plutonium. Right? Because data can be weaponized. If you're in the marketing business, you got to think about that. I don't think we're going to go into the future where we can weaponize data as much as we have, because the weaponizing is getting really good. And you can see the whole social media crisis is exactly about this. The whole Facebook crisis, which is a crisis in my view, a global crisis of trust. It's exactly because of this plutonium issue. Right? How do we use data? And without data, we can't do anything, right? Without running afoul of the things that we really want to keep to ourselves. I mean, I like to jokingly say to my American futurist colleagues, you know, if you don't have anything to hide, you're probably not human. And I always get a good laugh about that when I speak in South America, but, you know, many people think that's kind of like, okay, far-fetched. But so this is an important issue. I'll touch base on that later. A really important thing in communication and marketing is now that we're just about maybe a year or two, maybe three at maximum, away from being able to communicate with computers. Yeah, you can speak to your computer now. You can do all kinds of things when you speak to your computer. But you have to keep it simple, otherwise, you know, many people will not actually appreciate the way that it looks like. I'm just going to change the view here. Just give me a second here. Okay, so what we have here right now is a situation where in a few years I can speak to my computer as if it was a human. And the computer can speak in my voice. And so the switch to natural user interfaces and you know, NLP progress, I'm going to command machines, I'm going to speak, I'm going to stop using interfaces, I'm just going to talk, right? That's a very big shift, I think, also if you're looking at marketing and search, I'm going to switch to my voice. Well, people are already doing that, right? But most people are still, you know, using the usual talking. So here's a great example, Microsoft HoloLens, that you've got to see. And of course, this is a demo, right? But we kind of get an inkling of where this could go. And I think now this is going to get a huge boost because everybody wished they could do this. There's going to be audio on this, so I hope you can hear this.
Let me introduce you to Mini-Me.
Okay.
There she is, my perfect holograph. And thanks to the power of HoloLens 2, she just floats right with me. I'm literally holding my hologram, so natural. Now, she's a little small to do a keynote. So let's get her up so she can do full-size Japanese keynote. Render keynote.
So not only is she actually appearing like a copy of herself, but she's also speaking Japanese. And yeah, clearly this is a demo, but I mean, let's face it, the technology is here. I mean, IBM has been talking about AI for years, and we have very similar astonishing developments like the debater, you know, the IBM debater. Like, you know, this mind-boggling. Yeah? Okay, so you can say right now, demo stage and not ready for big production, but, you know, how long is it going to be? Not 20 years? We're going to supercomputing, quantum computing, 5G networks, and 10 million, billion people on the internet. Yeah, this is going to be our new normal. This is going to be as normal, not necessarily HoloLens, but augmented virtual reality. The new normal like today is WhatsApp. And here's the other part that we have to face here, right? Yeah, look at the numbers. Of course, some of your companies, the companies are actually represented here at this meeting. Right? It kind of shows what's happening, right? There's a huge amount of growth there. In fact, you could say, of course, Google and Facebook and others are suffering from maybe a decline in advertising, which I think is temporary. But generally, we can say technology holds a solution to many of the issues served in the crisis. So that's going to be clearly a way forward, working from home. I mean, not everybody has an office like this. But, I mean, people are getting used to it. Right? I mean, here in Switzerland, I many of my friends that live around here, you know, they're maybe 50, 60 years old, and they've never actually figured this out. But now everybody's happily working from home. And I have a neighbor, you know, he's 75. He stopped cooking, and he gets stuff on Uber Eats. You know, it's like, yeah. So the new normal is remote everything. And does that mean we're going to care less to meet each other? No. We're going to keep meeting each other. We're going to keep having real dates. We're going to keep going to real concerts when we can and how we can. But this will stay. This is a story that's staying, right? And if you're in marketing, you know, think about that. People are going to do different things there. In my view, digital, you know, the digital economy and, of course, digital marketing will be vastly accelerated because of the crisis. The other part that's more difficult is how you market will be subject to a lot of the discussions about data and security and abusing data. And, you know, basically my view is advertising and marketing will experience a major reset as to how we do this, which I think is long overdue. And now there's sort of a trigger moment here. So, yeah, this is the world today, and yeah, you know about this term, right? Techlash. You know, it's never been really discussed very much, but quite clearly, you know, we're seeing a lot of people who are concerned about the power of technology. To which I would say, quite simply, too much of a good thing is a very bad thing. Think about coffee, cigarettes, alcohol, whatever you want to think about. You know, we don't make cigarettes illegal except for, you know, if you're under 14 or whatever, or 12, you know, in some countries. Alcohol is legal in most countries, but they can kill you. Right? So too much of a good thing in terms of technology when we get too far into this, like we have with social media, we clearly have gone too far with the algorithm. We need to inject some humanity in there, some social contract. And that's going to be a major debate, and I think that most companies in this meeting, and I have the list here, you know, we need to lead this into a good direction of finding the right balance. Right? Remember years ago, cigarette companies used to put substances into the cigarettes that would get you even more addicted, and the burger guys did the same thing. Right? I don't think that's legal anymore. But technology kind of puts things into the buckets that we get more addicted, right? We need to find a way forward where we can have a good balance here with those things. And that brings me to the other point. Right? There is no topic more misunderstood than artificial intelligence. Because you have people who don't even know the definition, and then you have many other people who are saying this is like the Holy Grail. Right? When you think about intelligence, right? When you come home tonight and you talk to your kids at the dinner table, okay, and you have a conversation and your son tells you that, you know, what kind of grades he achieved and all these kind of things, that's called information. Right? That's called data. But when your son doesn't say anything and he has a really stupid grin on his face and he's looking like this, then you know that he's probably fallen in love for the first time, right? You understand it. Right? That's called intelligence. Can a computer identify people who are in love? Yes. Right? But the circumstances are quite complicated. So let's talk about AI. First, I want to have these three different rings. It's probably not new to you, but I just want to make sure we have the right definition. Right? The real action today is in machine learning and deep learning. Right? And especially in your turf, you know, getting lots amount of data, finding patterns, recognizing possibilities, matching that with human intelligence. I always say when HI, human intelligence, meets HI, AI, business as usual is over. We're going to be able to attach ourselves to this huge fire hose of intelligence, right? And here's what I want to use as a definition. Demis Hassabis from DeepMind has the best definition. But it's one that should scare us a little bit. It's computer systems that turn information and data into knowledge. I mean, think about that for a second. He's not talking about, you know, being able to achieve our objective or any of those things like AI scientists talk about. Right? He's talking about building knowledge. I mean, isn't that what we do? Don't we pride ourselves on knowledge, experience, expertise? So I would say to this quite clearly, computer knowledge, binary knowledge, algorithmic knowledge is powerful, but it's completely different than our knowledge. Think about that when you think about your favorite place in the world that you want to go to. You don't describe it as a GPS coordinate. You have sound, smell, numbers, figures, pictures, all at the same time. This is how we think of the world. So just to add some more definitions to this, also making sure we know, machine learning is the idea of insights without programming. That's quite familiar. And the next one is deep learning, is creating patterns for the use in decision making. And I think that's kind of the holy grail in so many ways. But we can safely say for a machine to reach human level wide understanding of the world, some people would argue that will never happen, and some people are saying it will happen gradually, but you know, Ray Kurzweil, I think, is correct when he says 2050 as the point of that convergence. You know. In the meantime, what we have here really is intelligent assistance, right? And this is what it does. Right? It basically takes things that we used to do ourselves, and it creates sort of an abundance. Right? And it takes away the routine. This here is the most important factor, right, when you talk about our future. routine. And there's so much routine in marketing, right? Fact-finding, checking, coordinating. I mean, this is basically what is happening is that the end of routine is near because machines will learn all of the routines that don't require human ingenuity. But you'd be surprised how many things do actually require human ingenuity. I think there's a McKinsey study shown that roughly 45% of most jobs can be automated, but only 5% can be automated completely. There's a very big difference in here, right? So I think machines will do all of our routines. I'll talk about later when I talk about the future of work. But this is something that we have to deploy. Right? But let's be sure to say that we should not let machines handle what is not a routine that a human must do. Right? For example, probation. We're going to let people out of jail because the machine has observed them for 1,000 hours of video recording. Right? Is that a routine that we should give to humans or to machines? I think the humans should stay in the loop there for quite some time. So for the next decade, I don't think we have to worry much about being in the loop because the machines can't do it quite yet, but eventually that's going to be a big discussion about where we are going with this. So this is clearly our future, the handshake between humans and machines. And I tell you this, will require substantial wisdom. Einstein, one of the wisest people ever lived, right? He said, in our future, imagination is more important than knowledge. It's to be able to put those pieces together. I think this is going to be crucial for us. The end of routine is not the end of work. It's just the end of routines. If your job is 100% routine, it is the end of your job. But if you take a good look, even a call center, is it 100% routine? Yeah, sometimes. But I think that's something we have to get used to. Machines can learn the routine. And that's going to get even more so when we look at supercomputing and quantum computing and all that, right? So here is this concept of the brain becoming part machine, but part human. Right? And we like this kind of anthropomorphizing machines, that we have thinking machines, right? I love the term. This is IBM marketing is fantastic, right? Inventing terms. But yeah, thinking machine. Okay, we want a thinking machine, but the machine does not think like us, right? I mean, ask a psychologist. Right? Humans don't think with their head, with their brain. We think with our body. The head happens to be part of the body, right? If you watch the movie Her, one of my favorite movies, you clearly understand what that difference is between humans and machines. And I think it's also really important to understand this process, that artificial intelligence can do many things, but the stuff that really comes easy for humans, instant. Right? Machine misses the targets. So Morovec, the researcher, he's a robotics researcher, originally from Hungary, he always says that whatever is easy for a computer is hard for a human and vice versa. And I think that may change over time a little bit, but I don't think we should make whatever is easy for a human easy for a computer. That could end very badly for us. So we have to be careful. I think the ideal future that we want is HI, human intelligence, and that means emotional, kinesthetic, social, intellectual, all of that. You know, there's 12 different kinds of intelligence. Pair that up with machine intelligence. And keep the difference. Don't believe for a minute that our future is to converge with the machine so that we can be powerful enough. You know? That is a ludicrous idea. Because, you know, in the end, we couldn't compete on the intellectual firepower, on the logical firepower. You know? And that is also the problem behind things like social media, right? Too much algorithm. You can say, okay, that's difficult. Yeah. I have no doubt that's difficult. And I would say in the case of Facebook, that's probably not intended, right? But it is one of the challenges that we need to face. Too much algorithms end up in a world that is run by algorithms where whatever whoever knows the algorithms can move it around, right? So it's something we have to think about when we talk about advertising, marketing. So that's my next topic. Let me start here, right? I mean, we're living in this world of VUCA, military words, right? And now VUCA is even more so than ever before. Right? Volatile, uncertain, complex, ambiguous. I mean, our kids, I don't know if you have kids, but I have two kids, and their future is perpetually VUCA. Right? It's, I mean, if you're a millennial around 25, this is the prime topic for millennials. Because they feel like, you know, it's all constantly changing. What am I supposed to do? And this is the answer that big brands have to give, right? We have to be fast. We have to be unorthodox. We have to create. And we have to be awesome. I mean, if you're looking at the brands that are leading the world today, they have those four attributes. I call this flipping the VUCA. Right? And awesomeness. I mean, look at companies like Patagonia, right? I mean, what an awesome brand. Doing their own thing. And I think many companies looking in this direction, they're saying, okay, now how do we do this? Well, obviously that's not going to be entirely easy, but I'll give you some examples. You know, I think this all boils down to this, right? When you have velocity and awesomeness, you can create trust. And keep in mind, when you're talking about marketing, selling, business development, all of the things of promoting things, so this is all going to be about trust. This is not about facts. Facts are always part of the mix, of course, right? This is about a feeling. You know, when people are going to look back at this crisis 2 years from now, they're going to say, what did this brand do during the crisis? What did this person do during the crisis? Did they give something? Did they go the extra mile? Okay. Did they make any changes? Just like my parents used to ask, you know, what did those people do during the war? You know, long time ago, obviously, right? This is going to be a key question. Right? So, good example, Salesforce. Right? I mean, what is Salesforce doing building a COVID-19 surge engine? Well, that's obviously a way for them to look credible. Right? I mean, Salesforce has been one of the leaders in the ethical business discussion. You know, Mark Benioff has talked about this many times. Also, the shift from the shareholder concept to the stakeholder, right? A wider environment. And on the other side of the equation, we have Airbnb. Right? That has miserably failed with a great reward for failure in this crisis because their two-sided model can't really exist in this market where everybody wants to get out, right? I mean, everybody just wants a refund. And I was a very steady Airbnb user for a long time. And I like what Brian has done with the company, but now I have to say it's complete utter failure when it's about building trust for the future. So that is a lesson we must learn, right? Velocity, unorthodoxy, co-creation, awesomeness. Brings me back to the AI thing, right? I mean, in many ways, we already live in this world where AI is telling us, you know, like Gmail tells me, you can answer this and just get it done, right? Great, great tool. Right? And making suggestions, or all the way up to, of course, genetic suggestions that you can use from companies like Human Longevity Inc. That use AI for this, right? And AI has also created this mechanism of where we stay inside of what we know, because that's what AI knows. Right? I mean, it's funny. I always say that the biggest problem with this is a binary world. Yeah? It's the world of machines. Yes, no, yes, no, yes, no. But do you know a human that lives in a yes-no world? No, we don't, right? Especially not in Brazil. We live in a world of maybe, right? Changing our mind, finding a new approach. It's very important, right, in media that we rehumanize. Right? That we use technology to what it should be doing, which is to give us arguments and data and points to consider, but not to decide on us. I mean, what has happened to media, in my view, is detrimental. Right? I mean, it can't be that we're kicking out all the journalists and the media producers in favor of a machine. So let's have a great machine, bring the humans back I think that would be amazing if we can go down this future like this. Right? This, in my view, is the future of brands, to rehumanize. And when I say rehumanize, I'm talking about rehumanizing with technology, but setting our priorities straight. I mean, what is your story as a brand? What's your purpose? And that has always been a big discussion, of course. But now with COVID, we're all saying, you know, what is the purpose and can I trust them? So this here is an overview of a book by Martin Seligman when he talks about happiness. You got to read this. It's definitely a must read for marketers, right? And he says, happiness is about positivity, engagement, relationships, meaning, accomplishment. That's how we define happiness. He calls it PERMA, you know, permanent happiness. And when I was looking at marketing, you know, doing research for this event, but also in general, I see so many sources that talk about how data is the currency of marketing. It's not. It is one of the important things in there. The real currency is meaning. And make no mistake about this, if you have no data, you probably won't have any meaning. But meaning is really what, in the end, creates your brand. This approach of PERMA, I think, is where things are going. Right? 3 points here in terms of meaning: engagement, relationships, purpose, meaning. And yes, that has always been true, but now we have technology, of course, in a way of helping us to create this meaning. So let's bring in the data, but the currency that we need to have with our clients is really about this, right? That brings me to another good angle in this crisis, you know? Women, just like at this event, are running the show. Right? In many ways, you could say that what we see now is the countries run by women, they're the ones doing well. Right? New Zealand, Iceland, Denmark, Finland, Norway, Taiwan. And so this is what creates your brand, right? And this is something, a really interesting story. I'll play a short sample from Jacinda Ardern here, the Prime Minister of New Zealand, who's my favorite showcase for this, right, for this kind of trend towards EQ, emotional intelligence, right? So let me play this one.
If I could distill it down into one concept that we are pursuing in New Zealand, it is simple, and it is this: kindness.
Yeah, can you imagine, yeah, another male politician coming forward suggesting kindness as a principle? Right. So this is about the brand, right? And what brands are doing this? I love the brands who are doing this, you know, who are creating something that you can say, well, this is a message, right? It's actually not just a sales factor. And in this crisis, this photo made the news in Italy and all over the world, in Italian, of course. It says, if you can give something, give something. If you need to take something, take something. Right? And there's two baskets. Right? And that shows you, this is how we have to think of our brand. If somebody needs something from us and we can give it, then we give it. Right? If somebody needs something and they can remunerate, then we take that. Right? It's a two-way situation. Right? And this is what has made the news all over the place, because it's a question of solidarity, of compassion, of, you know, helping others find their way forward and so on. So that brings me to digital ethics. There isn't a more important topic than this right now, well, apart from COVID and all that stuff, of course, with overriding everything. But I talk about digital ethics a lot because I think it's really important that we think about technology as what we want it to do, right, rather than what it can do. And I was at the European Commission event about 8 months ago. I was listening to Tim Cook, the CEO of Apple, and he said, technology can do great things, but it does not want to do great things. It doesn't want anything. I was thinking, oh, that's so true. I mean, what does a technology know about wanting? Well, except for wanting more data, of course, right? I mean, this is something that we have to do, Right? So here's the challenge. I mean, many of you are in the business of technology, and of course LinkedIn is, right? Microsoft is. Technology has no ethics. With that, I don't mean that technology companies don't have ethics. I do hope they have, right? And I've observed it. But technology by itself doesn't care about values or feelings or, you know, why it's important or, you know, basically context, right? It doesn't know. A face recognition software does not know what a face is. It doesn't have one. It's not existing. It doesn't have human agency. And it certainly doesn't know what it feels like to be angry, but it can tell that I am angry. Right? Let's make no mistake about this. Existence is something else than simulation. Right? So technology doesn't have that skill. If we want technology to do the right thing, then we need to find ways around it through policy and governance and social contracts and regulation. I mean, Satya from Microsoft, the CEO of Microsoft, has said many times that he wants technology like AI to be regulated, right? Because of this very issue. So I think that's something that we have to look at, you know, and let's define it also. Ethics is knowing the difference between what you have the power to do and what is the right thing to do. I know many of you are going to say, oh, you know, how do we know what is the right thing to do? Isn't it different for everybody? Yes, it is. But on the lowest common denominator, you'd be surprised how much you would agree what is the right thing to do. After Hiroshima and Nagasaki, the entire world community took 12 years to say the right thing to do is that we're not going to build more nuclear bombs. And hence we have a nuclear non-proliferation agreements. We can agree on these things. So that's a really important issue. So let me move into this ethics thing a little bit more. Sometimes it feels like we're living in this world where many things that are important to us are being sucked into this giant funnel. Right? And this funnel where we say, okay, it used to be interesting, it used to be good, and now technology is making it so much quicker and faster, and in the end we end up with this, right? The Holy Grail is data logic, right? That's called dataism. And I think these things are very important. I mean, I built my business on data, right? But let's think about this for a second, right? Let's think about what that is. That's a part of our life. It's not our life. Right? So it's basically at this point when we think about this and we say, okay, how does this all fit together? It's quite clear here. You know, we need a bit of a reset here. Right? Reductionism, machine thinking. And this is the question I have to you, and of course to many of my colleague futurists also, is like, how do we resist this trend of saying, oh, it's all data? Right? It's funny, the other day, you know, I was listening to Jeff Bezos, because he's one of the most interesting people, I think, in this situation right now. And he always talks about how data is important. And in fact, he used to joke that everybody that comes to him, except for God, must bring data, right, to prove a point, right? And the other day I was in a conference, I think it was actually somewhere in South America, and he said, quote, I mean, it's been widely quoted, where he says, you know, I make all of my best decisions, my personal decisions, my business decisions, based on intuition, imagination, and my personal hunch. Right? I mean, this goes from a guy who is like the data maniac, right? And, you know, of course, Steve Jobs said this for a long time. The art of computing is about combining art and technology. Right? So this is something we have to think about when we think about advertising. You know, too much of a good thing can be a very bad thing. Do we really need to wear a VR outfit to nurse our babies? Right? I mean, at what point are we going to say that enough is enough, right? And I've started using that hashtag so you can take a good look at this. And here's the other thing that's happening with technology, right? When we use technology like face recognition or contact tracing, many good things can come from it. And clearly, in the case of emergency, it's totally justified to go down this road. But should an emergency situation become the new normal, as it has become, for example, in the US, you know, since 2011, most of the laws have not been revised. So I would say you're riffing off Einstein here now. Everything should be as connected as necessary, but not more. And to your business, I would say, everything should be as digital as possible, but not more. Necessary, sorry, not possible. I mean, what do we really need? How far do we go with this? Right? Important discussion to have. Because, you know, this is our reality. Technology is everywhere. Technology is getting intelligent. Technology has kind of taken over in so many ways. But these things that we have here as humans, right? I mean, that is what runs the show. Right? This is what makes brands. Can we stuff that into an algorithm? How do we create room for both? I mean, clearly this is going to be a challenge. Technology is not what we seek, but how we seek. You know, think about this for a second. I always like to joke and say, okay, you know, I didn't get married to my wife, of course, because she is efficient, right? Or just beyond all intelligence. Right? Efficiency, optimization, productivity is not that much of a concern. It can be very disorienting to have inefficient partners, of course, in terms of the everyday life, right? But the arguments are here, right? Creativity, emotion, intuition, mystery. When we think about the future of marketing, that is the key to us, to combine those two things to build a new future. So I've come up with a new thing. I call this the Neoluvian man. Of course, there's also a Neoluvian woman, which I'm not going to show you right now because I don't have it ready to go yet. But we're living in a world surrounded by these game changers. Intelligence, the Internet of Things, especially you. I mean, all of you are living in a world where these things are kind of completely normal now. Right? And so it's important that we position ourselves correctly. Right? Like Leonardo da Vinci said in the 1500s, we have to find our ideal positioning in the universe around us. And that's going to take a bit, little bit more than the concept of just saying, okay, it's, you know, it's all going to happen inadvertently. I think we're going to see a new renaissance. And you see in the discussion about the future of advertising and cookies and all that stuff, right? It's a huge debate about the renaissance of human values. If you can tap into that, right? If you can tap into that, you can make that work. I think that's a very, very big way forward. So that's one of my key points in this presentation. I want to talk about some paradigm changes, and then we'll take some questions, okay? Make sure I don't keep you here until midnight, at least my time. So, important paradigm change. Here's one. We are now getting ready to face the truth, like we did with COVID. You know, the truth of COVID is, just as a preamble here, right? The more unequal the country is, the more infections we have. And God knows that's very true for the U.S. and the U.K., South Africa, and now Brazil. And why is that? Because we're not organized in making it possible for people to stay away and to stay home like we are here in Switzerland, right, where the curve has gone flat. And now we're realizing we need to be able to put measures in place to prevent this. And now what's going to happen here is, in a similar way, is we're going to see a carbon tax on every activity in the world, including flying, because that is one of the solutions for climate change. We're going to see the unthinkable become thinkable. Okay. And that's so true. You know, we've thought, for example, 2 years ago, we said, okay, if the government pays everyone to stay alive and not to be out on the street, right, that's either called socialism or communism, or it's like the basic income guarantee, whatever you want to call it, right? And it's here now. I mean, here in Switzerland and in Europe, this is what we have, right? The government is supporting people. I don't know what the discussion is in South America, but it seems less likely to be a major stream there. But so I think this is where we're going. Right? We're going to a new world that is not going to just look at monetary benefits and profits and growth, you know? It's going to send a new message, and I think we're seeing that emerge right now. That has been discussed for a long time, including, of course, the discussion about stakeholder value. Right? People, planet, purpose, and prosperity. I think if your brand can stand for that, as many brands like Unilever and others have shown to reposition in this direction, right? It's a circular economy, all of those things, right? I mean, we're talking about a future that is going to entail something completely different. Right? You can bet in a few years, probably 5 or 7 years, we're going to see a stock market that will value companies based on four principles, not just on growth and profit. And all our bonuses are going to be paid by taking off all those four boxes. Right? Have we done something for people? Have we done something for purpose? So that's a very big thing. If you think about consumers, you know, that's especially in South America. You know, this is clearly a continent of human thinking. Right? In many ways, that's quite similar to Europe. You know, we are humanists. You know, we care about other things. So the final thoughts, and then we'll have some debates. And I know I've given you a lot of stuff to think about. We're going to distribute the video, of course, and also hopefully the slides, parentheses, because I'm not using regular slides here. But so I showed this in the beginning, right? The great transformation. Let's embrace it, and let's brace for it. Things are going to be different. People will have different narratives, different stories. They'll have different emphasis. They'll care for different things. We're not going to go back to saying, well, let's forget about 2020. Let's write off 2020. It's just a write off, right? And moving into a new world that's, yeah, okay, that's true in many ways, but we're going to move to a new world that is going to be substantially upside down. Right? Big tech, big health, big state, big brands, hopefully. Right? And I've talked about this a lot in the past, you know, this, the future principles. The first three, you know, of course, those are the principles of technology. So exponential growth, exponential power, convergent technologies, AI, data coming together, and combinatorial products. For example, as I think Siemens has a digital twin initiative, right? That wouldn't be possible without data and virtuality and virtualization and all of those things that we see coming together. So that's quite clear. I think most of you are already quite familiar with this. But now we have three other ones. And these are jump-started now. People want a holistic business model. They want to make sure that everybody gets a piece, especially in the case of emergency. And this will not be the last pandemic, and it will not be the last emergency. I mean, climate change is going to be 1,000x of COVID, right? 40 years from now, if we go on like this. The circular economy, the sustainable economy, and this is where we have to put our flag, right? Not just say we're going to increase revenues exponentially. Right? Well, how we're going to, what we stand for, that's going to make, I think, all the difference for us. So that's kind of what I would put on the flag of a big brand today. And this is the most important point I kept making in the presentation, right? People want to know that we're real, that we're tangible, you know, where we actually exist. Right? So my final advice, you know, which is a big part of my book that I wrote a few years ago, embrace technology, but don't become it. Because becoming technology makes you a commodity, takes away our value. So thanks very much for listening. You know, the book I just talked about is available everywhere, also in Portuguese. Unfortunately, not in Brazilian, but in Portuguese and in Spanish. And I think you're all going to get one, actually, is what I hear somewhere in the grapevine. So thanks for your attention, and I know it's been a long haul. Thanks for hanging in there, and let's switch back to my living room, and then we can take some questions.